Later this week will mark the 80th anniversary of the death of writer Virginia Woolf, who died by suicide on the 20th of March in 1941 at the age of 59. She was one of the most important modernist writers of the 20th century and a pioneer of the stream of consciousness form. Her innovative work captured the fast-changing world in which she was working, exploring transformations in gender roles, sexuality and class. She's best known for classic novels like The Waves, To the Lighthouse, Orlando and Mrs. Dalloway. But her essays on literary history, artistic theory and women's writing have also had a major influence, including, of course, the seminal text A Room of One's Own, which addressed the status of women and more particularly women artists. As well as writing, she was a publisher and a key member of the so-called Bloomsbury set of artists, writers and intellectuals. I'm joined this evening by critic John Self to talk about the life and work of Virginia Woolf. John, you say that Virginia Woolf is perhaps more talked about than she is read these days. So before we talk about the work, tell us a little bit about who she was, the kind of world that she came from and lived in. A world of privilege.
Yeah, a world of privilege, certainly, Sean. You know, she grew up in a wealthy family, although what she did experience was that her brothers were privately educated, went to Oxford. She wasn't allowed to do that. And this was still the early 20th century, whenever women didn't have the vote and so on. So she did experience a lot of difference there. But she was from a privileged background, and she certainly experienced a much smoother, frictionless rise in her life than most people around her did. But she was very aware of that as well. You know, in her diaries in 100 years ago in 1921, she was talking about the troubles in Ireland and how she felt cocooned away from it. And so she was privileged, but she was aware of her privilege.
And the educational advantages that came to some of the men in her family did not come her way.
No, that's right. That's right. And you mentioned A Room of One's Own in the introduction, and she wrote about that and gave a talk about that in 1929. And what she said was that she invented this fictional sister for Shakespeare called Judith Shakespeare. And she said that if she had existed, she wouldn't have been able to do what Shakespeare did in terms of writing all the plays and the success, because the women just didn't have the opportunities. She would have been off in the home, doing the housework and things like that. So, she was a pioneering feminist in that sense.
In the particulars of her writing, I mentioned this idea that she was a modernist, an innovator when it came to form. And I suppose the stream of consciousness was particularly important in Virginia Woolf and in her writing. What do you think she was trying to achieve in that new expression or that new way of that new form that she explored?
Yeah, well, what she was trying to do, I suppose, is what all writers have tried to do from the start of time, which is to represent life as it really is experienced by all of us. And she felt that she could do that by paying more attention perhaps to the small things than to the big things, by thinking about how we think about life, how our thoughts go, so a stream of consciousness or like an eddy of consciousness, you know, things go back, our minds float back and forward. The word she used was free. She wanted her books to be free, free of the encumbrances and expectations of fiction. Now, of course, some of the expectations of fiction, like having a plot, are very welcome, and make the books easy to read. And, so her books do require a little bit of work, but I think they give great pleasure and reward in return for the work.
You say that Mrs. Dalloway, however, is a great starting point. It probably is, in terms of form. Is it easier to get to follow than some of the other writings?
Yeah, it is. And she kind of continued to push the envelope as she worked. So Mrs. Dalloway was kind of like, there was a transitional novel called Jacob's Room, and then she wrote Mrs. Dalloway, which was her first sort of fully modernist novel. But it's still pretty easy to follow. And actually, there's an interesting scene near the start where there's an aeroplane passing overhead, and it sort of drags the viewpoint of the book from character to character. It was a very interesting way of doing it. But after that, she wrote To the Lighthouse and The Waves. And by the time she got to The Waves, she was sort of telling the entire story of people's lives purely through dialogue. And it's a very sort of impressionistic thing. There's no real plot or story at all.
And Mrs. Dalloway, then, we're looking at this woman's day, another modernist writer from this part of the world.
Indeed, in the same month as well. It was one day in June for Mrs. Dalloway, a different year. A woman preparing for a party, essentially, during the time of the Spanish flu and all the things that go through her mind and the memories. And then it compares her life with the life of another character called Septimus, who was suffering from I suppose they called it shell shock then, or post-traumatic stress disorder from the war. So it was, again, experiencing or being aware of the privilege, but also living the privilege.
Yeah, and obviously we think of Joyce and Ulysses and the one day that's involved there for two characters, I suppose, in some ways, both Bloom and Stephen Dedalus. What comparisons do you make there, or what comparisons, probably more importantly, did she make between herself and Joyce? Did she recognise his work, or did she refer to it in any way?
She did. I mean, she, and interestingly, they were almost exact contemporaries. You know, she was born about a week before Joyce. She died about 2 months after him. So they were, you know, they lived exactly the same time. They were doing exactly the same things, or trying to do the same things. She did. She liked Dubliners. She was a little bit less persuaded about Ulysses. Her great friend T.S. Eliot was constantly trying to persuade her of Ulysses' greatness. She did say that she thought it had, she said she thought it had genius, but she, and this is where we come to, I suppose, to the privilege and the snobbery inherent in her, which was that she considered that it was illiterate, underbred, the book of a self-taught working man, and we all know how distressing they are, she said. Oh, she said it was like a queasy undergraduate scratching his pimples, you know. So she obviously felt herself socially to be a cut above Joyce, and maybe she felt that came through in the work as well.
Yeah, we get a sense of that. I have a recording of her. I think it's believed that there's only one voice recording of Virginia Woolf that survives, made on the 29th of April 1937 when she was 55. Part of a BBC radio series called Words Fail Me, Virginia Woolf read an essay called Craftsmanship. The beginning and the end of the recording are lost, but here's a section from the middle of that essay.
Do we write better? Do we read better than we read and wrote 400 years ago, where we were unlectured, uncriticised, untaught? Is our modern Georgian literature a patch on the Elizabethan? Well, where are we to lay the blame? Not on our professors, not on our reviewers, not on our writers, but on words. It is words that are to blame. They are the wildest, freest, most irresponsible, most unteachable of all things. Of course, you can catch them and sort them and place them in alphabetical order in dictionaries, but words do not live in dictionaries. They live in the mind. If you want proof of this, consider how often, in moments of emotion, when we most need words, we find none. Yet there is the dictionary. There at our disposal are some 500,000 words, all in alphabetical order. But can we use them? No, because words do not live in dictionaries, they live in the mind.
So, I'm just thinking, I was listening to Virginia Woolf there, John Self. I know it's a recording from 1937. I know it's the BBC. So there's a certain delivery that we might associate with that time, that period, and that particular organisation. But the superiority, I think, or the sense of superiority is there in the sound. But when you actually listen to what she's saying, it's quite down to earth, to be fair to the woman.
Yeah, it is. I mean, she makes the Queen of England sound common in that recording, but she, you know, in her diaries, if you read her diaries, she was very much interested in everyday life, you know, and in what was happening, as I said, in other parts of the world. And she was, you know, she I suppose you could say that she couldn't have written about how people think and in books that are still read 100 years later if she didn't have that down-to-earth quality and understanding of what real life's like. And, you know, she 100 years ago, actually, she wrote in her diary about 1921 about conversations she had about how none of her or her contemporaries would be read in 100 years' time, and she was wrong about that.
And in terms then of, you know, we get the sense in the accent as well, but the world that she lived in, the Bloomsbury set, her husband Leonard Woolf, and she had a long affair with Vita Sackville-West. In fact, letters about between her and Vita Sackville-West quite recently published.
Yes.
That Bloomsbury set, how would you characterise that set of people, John?
Well, this was a group of, I mean, at the core there were about 10 of them. It was like E.M. Forster, you know, John Maynard Keynes, Virginia's sister Vanessa Bell, the artist, and others. And they were, I suppose, forward-thinking, anti-bourgeois values. They wanted to find new ways of doing things. I think, you know, looking back on them, and maybe because they've become such a turn of phrase. They almost seem quite cliquish and cosy and maybe inward looking, especially when you think of all the sort of the war and Spanish flu and financial crises that were going around them, that they were to some extent sheltered from. But I mean, you mentioned Vida Sackville-West and Virginia's relationship with her. And of course, Virginia wrote a book called Orlando, which was inspired by Vida and her relationship with her. That was quite a forward-looking book as well in terms of sexuality.
Yeah, because there's quite a gender fluidity across the book, and it moves across time with total ease in the way only a modernist writer could.
Yeah. And in fact, that's one. I mean, it was written around the same time as To the Lighthouse, late 1920s. But it's not of the same type. It's a much more straightforward book. So, you know, again, maybe that's the entry level rather than Mrs. Dalloway. And then it's a much more playful book, much more straightforward. Fun, you know, it's about a person who changed sex or gender, lived for 300 years. I mean, what could be more fun and interesting than that?
We can't not mention A Room of One's Own, the seminal text. How important is that in terms of, I suppose, in terms of feminist thought? It was hugely important.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I mentioned the Shakespeare sister concept that she wrote about earlier, but also she said in A Room of One's Own that what a woman needs to be able to write fiction is £500 a year in a room of one's own. So you've got time to think and independence of spirit and mind. And in fact, she herself, although she was from a privileged family, she wasn't hugely rich once her parents died. It wasn't until she became sort of the mid-1920s that she started to be able to finance herself and stop relying on her husband. She had that £500 a year from her own writing.
And sadly dogged by depression and mental illness throughout her life right to the very end.
Yes, unfortunately. And she, as we said at the outset, she took her own life when she felt another wave of mental illness coming on, and that she just felt she wasn't going to survive. She was famous even then, and her death was headline news. It was on the BBC that evening's news and so on.
Well, yeah, as you say, maybe we should go to the writing, not talk so much about her, but talk about her writing instead. So thanks for being with us this evening. That's John Self speaking to us about Virginia Woolf, who the 80th anniversary of her death will be on the 28th of March. Oh, yes, just news coming into us about the Rathbones Folio Prize. The winner has just been announced, Carmen Machado for In the Dream House. Carmen will be talking to us soon on the programme here. Among the shortlist for the Rathbones Folio Prize this year were Elaine Feeney for her novel As You Were, and Erin the Grafer for A Ghost in the Throat, and Sarah Baum's Handiwork. But congratulations to Carmen Machado, and we will be speaking to her, as I said, later on the programme. Not tonight, but in the coming weeks.